Hey everyone, welcome back to the Shintaro Higashi Show with Peter Yu. Today we're going to talk about the mental side of judo, something you don't really see, right? The physical side, everybody sees. You got a great set of abs that are sticking through your gi, like people are going to see that. You have a great uchimata, people are going to see that. But there's this underlying mentality, right, that is not very visible. So that's what we want to talk a little bit about today. One of the listeners kind of suggested this and, you know, we're going to take it away.
Right. So we've talked a lot about the physical side of judo, you know, the techniques and the strategies and then the training and the diet and whatnot.
All that
so,
diet,
but very we're going to see, how judo, you know, benefits you mentally and then what kind of mentality is required to be good at judo in a way. So personally, I think the biggest benefit I got mentally speaking from judo is confidence.
So
because, you know, I think the physical training aspect, like the fact that I can like defend myself in a way, gave me a lot of confidence in day-to-day life. So anything, what do you think about that aspect, the confidence boost side?
Well, you know, so this is the thing, like when you go into a dojo, right, and then you are learning how to break fall for the first time, the person who's listening who's already done judo is going to be like, yeah, it's not a big deal. But if you sit on your couch and you have back issues and you're kind of out of shape or whatever it is, and then you're about to take a big break fall and you're trusting this person, you don't know how hard this person is going to throw you. All you see are these YouTube highlights. So you have to like trust this person. And all these little flags are going off, like this guy's kind of a dick. I don't really trust him. You know, this guy seems really nice. Maybe I trust him. This guy's big, therefore he may hurt me, you know, which is kind of like a flawed reasoning thing. But I mean, people have that kind of a thing, right?
Right.
And then, okay, so I don't know. I got paired up with this person and this person wants to throw me. He showed me a breakfall. Now we have to do it on the crash mat. Oh, it's so scary. It's so scary. Right. So now it's like overcoming that fear. Right? Because if you can't overcome that fear and then you resist, right, you could potentially get hurt.
Right.
If you try to step out of it, now you're not being a good partner and you could twist your knee, land on your shoulder, right?
I think
so
that's...
like you have to overcome that fear.
Right.
First and foremost. And you have to trust them. So like that's like some of the mental side. And once you're capable of doing that, right, then you start
become confident.
Building confident. Because like, oh, I could take a fall. Right. And that's like step one of like, oh man, I could get taken down on this crash mat in a cooperative setting. I could get back up and I'm good. And then you start trusting yourself to like say, okay, I trust this person, I trust that person. Now you're building confidence in your ability to select the people who are going to keep you safe.
Right.
Right.
So it's, so it's,
I think,
like
that's the first step.
Right. So in the so it's almost like the physical side of things are it's like a virtuous cycle where the physical side of things, you know, being outside of your physical comfort zone pushes you to face your fear, and then by overcoming it, you become more confident, and then you, you know, become more ingrained into the community, like start trusting more people.
Trusting more people. Now you're going live, right? And then you're like, okay, these techniques, you know, a lot of martial arts, like these techniques work. These techniques work. Try it, try it, try it. And you're doing it all in a cooperative setting. You never get to try it on someone that's actually actively resisting.
Right, right.
So now all of a sudden, you're trying it on someone that's actively resisting. You do judo for 6 months. You're there for 6 months. Now you're a yellow belt or a white belt with whatever stripe or whatever system you're in. And now somebody brand new comes along and that person's big, that person's strong, that person's scary. But you could take that person down or you could choke that person. Now that builds a little bit more confidence, right? Because before, six months ago, you would have saw that person and said, I can't beat that guy.
Right.
So again, you know, right?
So that's like, you know, for a lot of people who started as an adult, you know, you could kind of see the progression right there and, there.
Even kids.
So like I was going to ask, like personally speaking for from your experience, but because you've done judo all your life. So did you see that happening? Because like your life was so like, in, you know, judo was such a big part of your life the whole time.
So yeah, definitely.
Did you see that transition?
I built a lot of confidence through judo, right? If I didn't have judo, what else would I have done? You know, would I have tried to gain the same type of confidence, you know, if I was a golfer or something? It's like, yeah, I could hit the golf ball and like walk around a strut. But it's about value systems too. You know, some people need to feel like, oh man, I'm in control. Like I can defend myself. Some people need that. And I know people who don't care about that at all.
Right, right.
Not at all. Like, they're like, I'm happy, you know, do my software engineering job and just be out of shape, and I've never lifted a weight in my life. I'm physically weak. I don't care.
Yeah.
And I know people like that too.
Right, right.
you know, and I have my opinions about that. It's like, why? You should work out. You know, you should always work out. I'm a big fan of this. And, you know, it's good for your, you know, mindset and, you know, mental health. But anyway, that's completely besides the point. Yeah, I definitely felt little by little more and more confident. And then, you know, when you're growing up and you're in middle school, and then, you know, you have an encounter. I remember like this kid punted the ball and the ball like nailed my friend in the face and they got exchanging words. And then my friend got scared. And then I don't know, I there was no need for me to get involved, but I got involved. And I, like, you know,
tried to defend your friend.
Yeah, yeah. And then he shoved me and then he tried to tackle me. And then I put him in a front headlock, kneed him, and then like dumped him.
Oh,
you know, and, and then I was a hero for a day.
Right, you know,
like,
right.
And I'm not advocating for that, but like, that made me feel like, oh, I have a skill that can be useful in the real world. And I made that connection for the first time when I was like 11, 12. Because judo was something I did that like my school, like none of my friends did. Because my dojo was in Manhattan in the city. And then my school was in Westchester in the suburbs, like 30 minutes away. So none of my school friends went to judo. Right.
Right.
It's just something I did. And then it was always like, oh, Shintaro does judo, Shintaro does judo. And that was like my first
extra application and like confidence boost.
Yeah, it was a big confidence boost. And then it's like now all of a sudden I'm wrestling and then, you know, you go to a party or something and someone tries to put you in a headlock and then you pick them up and, you know, put them down and now all of a sudden you're like, okay, I'm not scared of physical confrontation.
And I
of course, a lot of it is false confidence because I could have easily gotten hit in the face with a lucky punch or whatever it was. But the ability to feel like I could walk into a party and no one can kick my ass here, you know, which is completely not true, right? Because you're drinking and there's a lot of people and three people and, you know, you get hit in the back of that. It's completely untrue, right?
Right.
But just the fact that like at that age, I didn't know any better. And I was like, yeah, no one could take me down. Yeah. And you walk into a room and it's just like, it feels good, you know? So like that feeds on itself. It's like a feedback loop. Right. Now all of a sudden everyone's like, okay, all right, this guy, you know, whatever. You know what I mean?
And I think it's not about like, oh, you know how to defend yourself and you're gonna go around and start fights everywhere with everyone. It's not even that. It's more like because you know how to you're confident that you can defend yourself in those physical altercations, you become more calm in a way. Like you're more relaxed. Yeah, you're not on the edge. You know, you can enjoy the moment better. I think that's on one aspect about being confident through judo.
Yeah. And then, you know, little by little, right, you start making these like risk calculuses in your head. The older you get, the more you do judo, the more you're aware of what people are physically capable of.
Right.
And you have no clue by looking at someone how good they are at whatever they do. You just don't know. So now all of a sudden, you develop sort of this humbleness, this respect, like, you know, this guy's kind of talking shit, you know, whatever it is, just let it go because, you know, and then you're going to be okay with it.
It's not worth it, yeah.
Yeah, so that, like, kind of definitely helps, right, add to sort of the confidence.
Yeah.
Right, and then, you know, also, like, when you're doing judo, the best part about it is, like, you're kind of going live every day. Like, you're actually doing full throttle, full resistance.
Right.
Your will versus their will, like, it's a full throttle sport. Right. So once you're doing that on a daily basis, like you don't shy away from that at all. Right.
Yeah.
And then now all of a sudden you're doing something that most people don't do. Right. So now you're like, okay, now you build confidence through that. It's like, not everyone can do this.
Right.
Even though sometimes I say everyone can do this. It's like sprinting, right? It's like when you're older, you don't sprint anymore. When was the last time you ran as fast as you possibly can until you just couldn't run anymore? Kids do it every day.
Yeah, I don't even remember now.
Yeah, you just got to do it.
Should do that more now.
When you do something like that, right? And then now all of a sudden you're like, okay, someone's trying to mug you and, you know, they're chasing you down the street. Can I outrun that person in a sprint?
Probably can if you've been doing it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I do it, but I can't run that long anyway. But still, like, you just kind of know where you are, right?
Right.
And then, you know, overcoming that initial lung burn, pushing through those limits and, right, all those things translates over to like, you know what, I am doing the best I can in this body. I'm developing the skill. I'm working really hard and not I'm better than everybody, but like you do develop a certain confidence, I think.
Right. Yeah. It's almost like we talked about this, like the level of knowledge, you know, like what is it? The first is like you don't even know what you don't know.
Yeah, you don't know what you don't know. That's like one of my biggest things that I always try to repeat myself.
And then as you go through this journey, if as you find out more about your physical limits and then pushing through it, you know, you're more aware about your limits and then what you can do to improve upon. And then, you know, and then that builds your confidence. And then now you kind of talked about overcoming adversities. Like, you know, judo training can be, you know, very gruesome, like very tough. It's like you said, it's very different from other popular sports in a way. Yeah. The grappling. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the most obvious example.
Yeah.
You know, here's another one. When you're doing judo randori all the time,
right?
You should develop certain habits.
Mm-hmm.
This technique is very high, you know, success rate for me. Mm-hmm. I'm a big, strong person. From, you know, I'm not that big, but it's like, you know, I'm 210 pounds, right? You know, not very tall, but 210 pounds. So I'm heavier than majority of the people in the room.
Right.
You put me on a distribution curve, I'm sort of at the top end, right? You know, considering like average weight is, you know, pounds or whatever it is. So now all of a sudden, you know, there's things that's going to work for me a little bit better than the average human body, or the things that I kind of force through using my physical attributes that kind of like can overcompensate for lack of sort of technique or timing or whatever it is.
Mm.
Right. So now all of a sudden I have that. And let's just say that's Osotogari.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say I was a lot taller too. Right. Let's just say I go over the back. I can stick my leg out and throw Osotogari. Now that's a high success rate for me.
Right.
If I go back to the room every day and just do that because I know it works, and throwing everyone out, am I really getting better? You know what I mean?
Not really. You're not really going outside of a comfort zone.
I'm just waiting for people to get better at defending that so I can get a little tiny bit better. Defend that. A little tiny bit better. So now I'm like looking at like little micro adjustments. That's good. But like I need a complimentary throw. Maybe society, right? Maybe Ouchi. I go inside, outside. Something like this. Snap down a sword. I got to work all the different sort of entries.
Right.
If I'm big enough to just stick a leg out, hook it, and go, I don't have to work on any of those entries.
Right, right.
Right? So I'm like sort of creating a barrier for myself mentally.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's a mentality. Because as opposed to being introspective and saying, hey, I need to work on these things. Why is this technique working for me? Why do I keep relying on this technique? You just going back, keep doing it. You're throwing people and you're like, I won, right? That's another type of mentality that inhibits growth. It's inhibiting your growth, right? So you have to kind of take a step back, look at it yourself and saying, okay, what? Why is this working? What is working? How is it working? How can I make it better? Right. Mm-hmm. And that's another sort of type of mentality that's very, very important. People who do this get better faster. People who don't do this and rely on one thing, you see those one trick ponies.
Right, right.
Right. In the dojo, that guy does drop Sayonagi. He throws a lot of people with it, but that's all he does. That's all he's got. That's all he does. Can you defend it? Yes. Okay. He'll never throw you ever again. Can you defend it? No. He'll always forever throw you forever and ever.
How was that, dude?
A little bit.
I got called out just now.
I wasn't even referring to you.
Yeah. But, you know, I think that's so true, because that introspection and then kind of going outside of the comfort zone, try to get broaden your, that's you need to switch on that mental switch. Cause when I first came to KBI, I was just, I was kind of like that, the one trick pony. Like I was young and fast, so I could just drop on it a lot of people, and I kept doing it. But then, you know, there were big flaws into this in that strategy. And you kind of, I guess this is why you need a good sensei. You know, Shintaro really helped me step out of it, and I'm more of a varied, like I have a variety of, you know, techniques that I use now, and then that actually adds to the, you know, the confidence, because I overcame the mental block. And so
because dropping and flopping is safe, man. Every time you get outgripped, you drop to your knees and go for a turn throw, and then, oh shoot, I missed, now I'm in the waza, now they're choking me, now they're not going to throw me anymore,
right?
That feels safe, you know, and it becomes a crutch every time I get outgripped and I go out of bounds. And sometimes I still do this, you know. Terrazzo's 6'4", he comes over my back and just grabs me, starts yanking on my head, kicking me in the shin. I'm like, you know, I'm just gonna step out of bounds. You know, and like that's a mental, that's a psychological thing, you know. That's like protecting myself, you know. That's self-preservation right there. Right, in every single way. So right. It's like you rely on that too much. You now all of a sudden your judo takes shape, and that is formed by the mental side of things. It has nothing to do with you being able to do osoto or ippon sanagi or lift in heavy weights. It has nothing to do with any of that. Mm-hmm. There's a great book called Trading in the Zone by Mark Douglas.
Douglas. Yeah.
It's like not even it has nothing to do with martial arts. It's about trading stocks and stuff like that. And then executing things like in a cold way, not a cold way, but like in a very methodical way,
right.
Keeping emotions out of it. And he doesn't even talk about like technical analysis or any of that stuff or fundamentals. Right. He just talks about the psychology of trading. And a lot of it is that in judo too.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if you're, let's just say for instance, like if you're an Uchimata guy and you're scared to get countered, now all of a sudden you're kind of not going for it full throttle, right? Like, I don't know. There's always a thing like not so, you know, confident, and you know, I don't know, this guy might take me on my head, and you know, so psychologically you've already sort of beaten yourself. It has nothing to do with their ability to be able to execute the technique, because you've already done this a million times. You've done the throws, you've done the nagakomi.
Physically, you're always, capable. Yeah.
Yeah, you're capable of doing. You make the shapes of it when you're doing uchikomi and nagakomi.
Right.
You just can't throw anybody with it.
Right.
And then a lot of people have this question. Why doesn't this throw work for me?
In randori.
Am I not pulling enough? Am I not doing this? Am I not doing that? It's like, no, man, you're scared. And you can't say they're scared, because then, you know, some people can handle that kind of criticism. Right? It's like, what do you mean I'm scared? I never get, I feel no one. People get like that. Right? but it's, you know, we all have fears. That's natural. Right. Fear is like present in every single human. If you don't have any fear, you're really dumb, and you're going to run into traffic. You know, like that's what we're designed to fear, things that are can potentially harm us.
Right.
So hesitating, and then like, oh, maybe I might get countered. Those things can really slow your judo down.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be aware of these things so you could overcome these things.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So that's a good point that you brought up about also like taking criticism. That's another mental aspect of judo. You said some people can't, just are not as good at taking criticism as others, and
constructive criticism. Yeah. And you know, sometimes criticism is negative criticism,
right?
You know, and sometimes it's misplaced. You know, it's easy for someone to armchair quarterback and say like, you're not pulling enough. You're not pulling enough. And you know, it's like, does this person really care about my skill and care about me, and is this person able to watch my judo and really give me good feedback, or is the guy just trying to make himself feel good and try to put himself in a hierarchical position, like, I know how to do this, Dan, you're just not pulling enough, you know, like that guy is the worst,
right? So it's like
taking criticism from him is different from taking criticism from someone who truly cares about you and has your best interest and really wants you and has the proper eye and skill. That's why that drives me crazy when white belts teaching other white belt stuff and coaching other white belts. Osoto, you're not pulling enough. Why aren't you pulling? You got to pull the sleeve, man. And then you pull them aside. It's like, stop that shit.
Right. It's more about, so it's both ways, really. It's like, you got to be able to take criticism well, and you got to be able to also give constructive criticism well, too.
Yeah.
Like at appropriate times to the right people.
Absolutely. So even if I see something in the room and I'm like, this person could benefit from this sort of feedback, sometimes I won't give it because that person is not ready to hear it, doesn't want it. They can't take it or can't do anything with that information. Sometimes more detrimental.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, your stance is negative, right? Your hips are so far back. You're attacking from too far away because you're scared. You know, like people don't want to hear that.
Right.
Nobody wants to hear that. Right. I didn't want to hear that. That's how sort of my father approached me. You know? You lost because you're weak. You're fighting like you're scared out there. You know, I hated it so much. It kind of had the, you know, it was like the negative reinforcement. It works. Negative reinforcement works. It's not the best thing. Sometimes it breaks athletes. But for me, like it fueled this fire like, you know, right? So yeah, negative reinforcement works to a certain level. Right. Like, it's not the best thing. We all know this. But, like, to a certain extent, like, some people respond to it pretty fairly well. Right. I know people who seek it out, like, hey, man, give me the truth. Give me the honesty. Like, just tell me I suck at this or that or what I need to work on. And, you know, people can, like, listen to it and take it, you know? So for me, like, I received negative reinforcement, but, you know, it worked to a certain extent. But it doesn't help you grow past a certain level. Right. So, you know, that's my two cents on that.
Right. So yeah. It's like, so it's going, criticism going both ways. And then now I think you kind of, we can, that's a good segue into this community aspect of it. It's like, you know, we talked a lot about, you know, individuals' mentality in judo, but now, you know, with criticism and whatnot, there's a communal aspect of, in the mentality of judo, like respecting each other and whatnot. So,
yes, absolutely, man. So, you know, whenever you're talking about Eastern versus Western, you talk about collectivist versus individual, right?
Right,
individualist.
Right.
And, you know, there's that famous picture, right? Like it has three fish over here and one fish in the front, right?
Mm.
And then you ask a Chinese person, right? Oh, those three fish are chasing that one fish. And then you ask an American person, they say, oh, that fish in the front is leading the three fish in the back, right? It's a perspective thing. It really is, you know? And in Japan, it's a very, very collectivist culture.
Right.
It's like, if you have a cold, you wear a mask, like, no questions.
Right.
You know what I mean? In the United States, like, it's not about, like, oh, I'm going to try to do my best for the corporations. Like, no, I'm getting ahead. I need that C-level suite. I need to get to this level of work. I need to win, right? It's about me, me, me. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. You have to think about you and...
You got
to
balance it out. And
it's a balance.
The benefits, yeah.
But just culturally speaking, Asian cultures tend to be much more collectivist in nature.
Right, right.
In the dojo, I think that's very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you have to want to win. And, you know, you're actually the only champion, really, right? If you win New Jersey States like you did in 2014... You're the guy that won it. I'm not on the podium with you. No one else is on the podium with you. You're on the podium, right, Peter?
Right, right.
Right? But, you like how I threw your bone there?
I know. Thanks, man.
Yeah, I remember that, you know? Yeah. But this is the thing. It's like, if you have a room full of people who are just selfish, I want to get better, I want to win, I'm here to train, now all of a sudden, they have zero care about the benefit or the well-being of their training partners. Now all of a sudden, they start hurting them. If the only reason why they're trying to help others or doing is selfish in nature, now you kind of have a toxic environment on hand.
Right.
And that's not the best environment to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So having like a room full of people who are collectively like, let's make each other better. Let's make each other stronger, right? And then you trust that the person that you're doing judo against has that intent for you. And then this person has that intent for me. That person has that intent for me. Now, all of a sudden, anybody I work with is trying to make me better.
Right.
And it's safe. And I could try things. And if I go for something, if I get countered, people aren't pointing their fingers like, ha, ha, ha. And then you don't have the guy running over like, you didn't pull the sleeve enough. Right. Like, that's a toxic environment.
Right.
So this mass psychology really, really is important in this field as well. Right. And when you're doing judo. And that's something that you see and you don't see. You know, somebody walks into a dojo, they feel that vibe, right? But a lot of the times they're looking at like, what technique? What is the sensei showing? What is this guy's tayo? Like, how is this guy doing his thing? And can I beat that guy? You know, people are so wrapped up in that focus. That's what you should be really looking at, right?
Mm-hmm.
The collectivist psychology of the room is a very learning-oriented growth mindset, like a warm community that I kind of want to send my kids into that world. Or is it like a cutthroat, everyone, all men, you know, by themselves, like kill the carrier sort of a feel.
Right. So it's because, you know, I mean? Even if, even when a champion goes on the podium, you have to remind that, of course, the champion has done the work and then he or she was trying to be better. But at the same time, there was a team behind the whole village, so to speak. Yeah.
That's, man, I can't even stress that enough. Like, it takes so much to send an athlete to the championships.
Right. Right. You know, it's not just about training either, right?
Yeah. Not just about training, man. And it is a little bit about training, but it's like, you know, it's my training partners. I need good training partners. I need every Randori, and every Randori that I do, I need another human being to do it with.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
And then when you have, it should be me. It's got to be me. You know, it's okay. Some people are wired that way.
Right.
You know, that's fine. I'm not saying don't do that. You know, there was a long time in my life where I was like that. It's like, just me. You know, but I think as a coach, you kind of have to sort of shift your mindset a little bit and understand some of these things and then adapt.
Yeah.
You know? Now I know a little bit better, so.
Right. He's a wise man now, Shintaro.
Maybe.
So then all of these things, you know, the confidence, the grit that overcoming adversities, and you know, this taking, giving and taking criticism well, and then this you know, team oriented mindset, all of these things can be transferred into your day-to-day life.
Can be, man. Yeah. And judo trains this. You could train every single one of these skills. If you do it mindfully and under a good guidance, you could train every single one of these skills. There's a girl right now in the dojo who's too shy. She always gets left out. Like, not left out, but like, if there's an odd number of people in the room, she like stands back at the corner. No one wants to work out with her. She's brand new. No one wants to teach her Osoto. You know, they want to learn, do their Tayo, do their Sode, do this, do that, you know. Yeah. Even the white belts want to work with the higher belts, and then some people are aggressive about it. Hey, you know, Johnny, like, can you work out with me? Stand on the sideline. Hey, listen, you know, lady, like, you got to go out there and get your partner. You got to be proactive.
Right.
Take the initiative. Right. You know, you're new in the room. You know, I understand, like, you're shy, but go out there and, you know, say hi. Hi, my name is, you know, Sally. That's a fake name. Sally, like, can you work out with me? And then, you know, sometimes people need the crutch of, like, for me to say, hey, Adam, can you work out with Sally?
Right, right.
And Adam's so nice. He's probably listening right now. Like, yeah, of course. And then, you know, he doesn't have to stick with that person.
Right, right.
Because I always form these partnerships in 3-4 minute chunks, always. Because I don't want anyone to feel stuck with somebody or like, oh, I'm stuck training, right? But Adam works with this woman and then stays with that woman for the rest of the class until the Rondori class, of course, right?
Right.
So he's a great dude to have in the room. But like, not just for that reason, but he's a great room period, guy period. But like, that woman can gain a lot out of that.
Right.
Taking the initiative, asking him for something, right? And sometimes you see things like, and you have to be clear and concise with your communication, right?
Right.
Sometimes somebody wants to work out with you. You feel like that person isn't safe. No thanks.
Right.
I already have a partner. I'm sorry.
So all that's such a good example, because it kind of pulls in everything. The confidence that she needs to work on herself, but at the same time, a sensei has to give her the right criticism, like constructive, like encouragement and criticism. And
yeah, also, I wouldn't even say criticism on that one.
Yeah, it's like, encouragement. Yeah. And then the room, the whole community has to be supportive for her to grow, for a safe place to grow, so that she can, you know, work on that mental muscle. And then she has to be introspective enough to recognize it and then try to step out of the comfort zone. So all of these
things. Here's another example. Yeah. You know how we do the forward rolls down the middle?
Yeah, yeah.
We do them in rank order, so the black belts are flying. Boom, boom, dama, boom, boom. Flying, flying, flying.
Right.
Get to the white belts and someone new, and they're like, oh, I've never done this before. Like, what I do? And then they're doing this thing and everyone's watching and they feel a little bit, you know, funny. And that's a great time to see like what their profile is like. The psychological profile is like, and then you could base the type of feedback you give based on that.
Right, right.
Sometimes I'll say something like, you've heard me say this, like, don't worry, no one's watching. But everyone is watching.
Yeah.
So like, it's a funny
little joke too. Yeah, yeah.
And then if they laugh, they're like, ha ha ha, okay. Clearly that's not a joke directed at to make fun of that person.
Right, right.
But it's like, ah, it's just funny. Everyone, no one's watching. Right. And then they do the role, and now they laughed it off, and now they built something there mentally. I didn't want to get in front and do this role in front of everyone. I did it. Since I made a funny joke, everyone laughed, and then they weren't laughing at me. But if there's a person who's very sensitive, that kind of thing, right? Are they laughing at me? I would make that joke.
Right, right.
I'd be like, you're doing great. You're doing great. Just do one more and you're good.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then they're like, ah, I don't know. I don't know. Just give me one. Do it for my knees. Go ahead. Oh, perfect. Yeah. And then sometimes they need the help. I run over, you know, I grab the collar and they're like, roll, roll, go. Yeah, go. Okay. You know, because fluency is a lot more important than that person.
Right.
And some people just need to hear like, oh, you're better than most people who begin.
Mm-hmm.
You're better than most beginners. Hey, dude, I'm pretty good, right? For a guy who's only done it for 4 times. It's like, yeah, you are.
Yeah.
Get over that. Get over that, you know, thing that you're holding. He's holding on to that thing.
Right, 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 right.
Right. And I've always kind of held on to some of that too. Anytime I tried a new sport, I'm like, I'm pretty good, right? For like, I've been doing judo my whole life. I should be pretty good at this, right? I mean, you're good at judo, you're good at everything. You know, and I had a sense of pride there, and that kind of stuff inhibits growth too, right? Mm-hmm. And it all contributes to the emotional intelligence.
Right, right.
Of the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And judo progressively builds that if it's the right community.
Mm-hmm.
Through that break fall, through that forward roll situation, right? Mm-hmm. Through like proactively asking someone through refusing rounds and saying, no, I already have someone. Oh, my knee hurts already. My knee hurts. So I'm not really going with anyone that's bigger than me. You know, doing it in a way, right? And understanding, like, there is a natural hierarchy with the belt system.
Right, right.
I saw a white belt ask a brown belt, hey, you want to work out with me? And Luca was just like, no.
Oh, my God, Luca.
I go with George next. And I'm just like, that, you know, like, you got to... You know, and I didn't say anything because it's like, it's Luca too. I have a soft spot for him.
Yeah.
He's like, has a, you know, then all the dude was, you know, he's just like, he's not going to get hurt.
Right.
But like, that's like a type of interaction that could little by little, that could like, you know, it plants that seed. You know what I mean?
It's like the cut. Yeah. Like that. You got to try to snip that out like before it
happens two or three times more. Like I might have to look, be like, Luca, listen, man, when you're refusing rounds, I know. You're here to train and all this stuff, but you gotta, hey, next round. Hey, I already have someone next. Hey, maybe in like a couple more.
Yeah. You know? There's a way to say, you know,
there's a way, refuse there's a method. Yeah. Yeah. And judo's great for this because if you're at a good school, everything is quick and concise. Everything's on a pace. It's like sort of this organized chaos is boom, 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 one thing after another. And you need to be able to quickly and concisely relay these messages in a way that's not gonna, right?
Yeah. And a good judo dojo could be like a practice ground, almost like, you know, how you do, you know, uchikomis before you go into the randori, because you want to build, practice all these moves and a safe space before going into the chaos. And then you do a lot of randori before you go into competitions, in the same way that you can, you know, practice all these mental muscles and build up your mental muscles in a safe space. Like a good judo dojo that you can apply to the real world. Yeah.
Yeah. And then when in the real life, do you ever collaborate with someone or have a conflict with someone arm's length face to face? When do you ever do that? That's a very uncomfortable thing.
Right.
All right. You grab the lapel and you grab the sleeve. I do the same thing. Right versus right. You could be right versus left. But hey, you know, like we're right here. You can smell my breath. You know what I mean? Like,
quite literally.
You go Sotogari. When you go Sotogari, you're going to put your head right here. And, you know, maybe you're not a touchy person. Maybe you've never been hugged as a kid. I don't even know, right? But we're going to be right here face to face. We're going to work on this thing together, right? And then you can immediately feel like the tension in their body, you know, whether they want to do it, whether they don't want to do it, whether if I'm showing something, they're already resisting.
Right.
Or they're just completely loose and limp. Right? Like you just feel a lot of these things because it's so personal.
Right, right.
Right? Like you're at this distance where it's just like, when are you ever in that distance?
Right.
And when you know, do you ever get that feeling? You don't even do that with your wife these days. You know, like, being in that, like, face-to-face for the first time. I mean, I'm not saying, I'm not trying to make it, you know. Right? Like, when do you face each other like this?
Right. Then, it's very rare.
We're going to work on something together. Me and you, right? Right here, right? Yeah. It's, you know, even me. It's like always like, yeah, you know, like we're sitting next to each other, phone, you know.
Phones,
like,
yeah.
It's too easy to do that.
In a way, it's like it makes things easier even in real life because you're going through this like weird exercise that's called judo. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's still kind of like, you know, sometimes it's, you know, I have my certain psychological things that I got to push through and work on too. You know what I mean? It's like preventing myself from getting sensei syndrome is a big one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what I mean? You told me about that a little. Yeah. Yeah, what is a sensei syndrome?
No, it's just like when you get gassed up and you become like, oh, man, like, you know, the king of the stopping grounds. But then it's just like the aberration is a little bit different, right? When you're a sensei.
Right.
And people make what it is of it. And some people treat, you know, their sensei like a service thing. You know, I pay for your service.
Right.
You. You know, of course, I nip that kind of, you know, thing right away. But like when you're talking to someone and you're teaching them and they're absolutely interested in what you're saying and they want your skill and they admire you and they're like, wow, you know, like,
right,
amazing. Anything you say is so cool. Like, oh, you're the best. You're so strong. And then, like, you get too many of those, you can really get to your head.
Right.
You know, and you start, like,
some people venerate, even, like, almost venerate their teachers, the sensei.
Yeah. So, like, that's, like, a sort of a thing. And then, you know, it's easy to, I like this term, armchair quarterback, you know, armchair quarterback. And you're like, oh, you know, there's a, you know, you got to nip that in the bud. And you know, when you're the guy that has all the answers in the room, all of a sudden you can fool yourself into thinking you know everything.
Right.
even though I frequently say I do know everything.
Well, how are you working on that? Like what are,
I'm
what are
not
some
really
things?
Working on it. You know? Just like aware of it. Just right. Awareness and being mindful of it is important.
Yeah, I think that's actually, you know, half the battle, really. More than
that really
half
is
the
half
battle.
The battle.
Yeah.
Because you could kind of like little by little get taken on this path, and before you know it.
Right. Right.
I have knockout powers without touching anybody. I have knockout powers. And you have a, you know, a group of people in the room that's willing to take falls for you, and you're like, mm-hmm. All right, you know.
And you end up on YouTube. Because you challenged the YouTube, MMA guy.
I'm telling you, man. I've known guys in the room like that I like sort of been training with, and my dad would be like, let me show you guys this throw.
Right.
And my dad would put their hand on the gi, and the guy would be like, oh. And my dad's like, what are you freaking doing? He's like, I just felt my energy leave my body. My dad's like, that's not a thing, man. Stop doing that. Yeah. Like, can you imagine, like, year after year after year, you're, like, in a basement teaching martial art to, like, 50 dedicated students, and mm-hmm. they're all doing that? Like, I can see how some of these guys can all of a sudden be like,
right.
I do have magical powers in my hands.
Right.
Like, every time I grab this person's wrist, he goes limp.
Ah, you know? Gosh.
Yeah, so yeah. It's like, you know, psychology, all
it's
that
kinda
stuff.
It's kind of related to, like, staying it's kind of related to staying humble all the time.
Staying
like
humble, yeah.
There's always more to learn, even if you're a sensei with the dojo with a lot of students.
I think that's one, you know,
I could say one thing you're doing right now, you know, to combat that kind of sensei syndrome that you speak of is you have your own sensei. You train with Brian Glick.
Yeah, I have a lot of senseis, yeah, man. My dad's my sensei too.
Exactly. You
know, I don't listen to him. But
yeah, exactly. So
that's
you have
a mental
lot of
block
sensei.
Too, man. I can't. It's hard for me to. That's it. Hard for me to learn from my father.
It's your old pops, you know.
You're doing tayo like this. I'm like, that's. I don't know about that, pops.
Right.
Yeah. You gotta lift heavier weights.
Yeah.
I don't know. You have to watch film. You just got your ass kicked. You got to watch film. It's like, I'm not watching that, Dad. I don't want to watch that.
Right.
Mental block right there. Mental block, you know? But yeah, I do have my own sensei, Brian. He's been teaching me stuff, jiu-jitsu stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'm trying to, right, be as spongy as possible, you know?
Right.
Open to all. Really trying to ask the right questions.
Right. I think that's, you know, talking about sensei, we already had a episode about that, but the mentality is that, you know, you could learn from anyone, like everyone could be your sensei. Like even if a white belt that walks into your dojo could be very, like a, so to speak, a black belt in some other areas like finance or something or computer.
Yeah.
You know, can always.
Man, he said something too that really reminded me of something that, you know, I don't mean like something that I already knew, but like something that I, you know, I needed that reminder, you know, and I've been kind of working on like this body lock passing situation, right? And it's like floating past, body lock, like kind of going back and forth. And, you know, I've been trying to like adapt it to my frame and things like this.
Right.
But it's like I'm kind of having not a hard time, but like I can't, you know, do it consistently on good people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I was like talking about it. I was like, yeah, man, these are the resistance I get sometimes, whatever. And then he's like, you got to understand, like, you know, when you try a new thing, like your entire game kind of drops down too, because you're trying to funnel everything to try those things. Like
normally
you do all these other things and now you're not doing those things, right? I can do all these other things, but now I'm not doing those things.
Mm-hmm.
You're just kind of trying to focus here and that skill hasn't really been refined yet. So you're going to open yourself up to certain counters and certain things. It's just like judo, right?
Yeah.
You're working on Tomonage, you're going to look dumb because you're just going to keep dropping to your back and it's not going to work.
Right.
You know? I know guys that have been working on Tomonage for 8 years and frustrated people for 8 years. Now they're throwing them. Took them a long time, right? And then I kind of needed that reminder like, oh, yeah, you know, yeah, that's right. You know, your whole game has to kind of come down because now I'm trying to build my game around that and then develop that piece of the puzzle.
Right.
Right. And I needed that reminder because I was kind of like getting down to myself like, man, Georgie's, you know, leg locked me the other day.
And he leg locked you.
He leg locked me. Yeah. I mean, I had nothing to do with the pass that I was working at, but I found myself trying to get into this one position to like force this one thing. And then like that led me to like make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And then that mistake led to me scrambling, trying to add something. And then he got me in a leg lock. And I was like,
yeah, that level of, you know, introspection gi, though, so is, yeah.
Like, yeah. He heel hooked me when we're in gi pants. And then like, you're not supposed to heel hook when you're wearing gi pants. You know?
Right. That's not allowed in judo.
It's kind of like doing a little, you know, like, but yeah, it's one of those things, you know?
Right. Yeah. I think that's a good point, because I'm also like, you know, since I moved to Michigan, I've been like dojo hopping, and I went to a BJJ gym, very good. But I realized that, you know, how like the whole, like you said, I sensed that my whole game was kind of coming down because I'm trying to work on my Newaza more at a BJJ school. And I was getting a little discouraged, but then, you know, I try to like keep telling myself, no, like you're trying
to build up a different
sport and then different aspect. And, you know, so I got to keep telling myself this is kind of introspection and resiliency. Yeah, that's another thing.
Don't get frustrated, get fascinated. That's what Martin Rooney used to always say that to me. Martin Rooney was my like strength and conditioning coach for years. He was a mentor of mine, you know. He had me training in his gym from like, you know, in my formative years of like late teens and early 20s. And he used to always say that, don't get frustrated, get fascinated.
I think that's a great saying. Don't get frustrated, be fascinated. Yeah.
And every time I started getting frustrated, I'm like, man, why am I getting frustrated? Like, I should be interested in this. And then, and I would look for what makes it fascinating.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
I think that's a. That's a good way to end this episode, you know, that saying, you know.
Taking guys, the emotion out of the trade.
Yeah. Don't get frustrated. Be fascinated.
Yeah. So that's the mentality of judo, I guess. Psychology of judo. Yeah. Could have probably talked a lot more about, you know, the competitive side of stuff, because everyone talks about that.
Right,
you
know,
my will versus your will, breaking the opponent. And that has a very wrestling heavy feel to it. But I think we did a good job.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Anything else before we end?
Nope. Thank you guys, everybody, reaching out and giving suggestions. I think this podcast is really picking up.
Yeah.
Please suggest it to your friends. And I like how people are reaching out to Peter now. Reach out to him.
Yeah. Yeah, guys.
Ask him guys what he's wearing at night.
Yeah. Like we mentioned in the beginning of the episode, this episode, the idea of this episode was suggested by one of you, so we're always open to suggestions, so please reach out to us, and
please stay tuned for the next episode.